Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld with Stonewall Live, the best of book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is John Michelson, a mystery writer who's written several books that I've read already. He's got dozens out there, short stories, novellas. John, hello. How are you doing? John, where are you? Oops, wait. John, hello?
Yes, I'm here. Trouble. Hello?
Okay, you're on the air. What's going on?
Hi, how are you this evening? I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. How's life in Atlanta tonight?
Actually, it's pretty nice. We had thunderstorms that rolled in early this afternoon and lowered the temperature. Humidity is not too bad, and it's pretty nice.
Okay. Well, yeah, as you know, I'm in Florida, you're in Atlanta, and I don't know where our listeners are, but it's really hot and humid in June. So we're used to it. We don't wear a lot of clothes, and it's all fine. It kind of gets you sexy. John,
likewise,
you
we
have...
keep the windows closed.
Oh, okay. It's never been opened. I live on the ocean. We get salt, sand, noise, the whole bit. Okay. So, let's talk about your books. When did you get started writing?
I've been writing all my life, to be honest with you. I probably started about 7 years old, just writing little short snippets of stories and just mainly fantasy ideas of things that were in my head and shared them with family, mostly my grandmother, and began writing them down at her encouragement.
Good.
Continued writing and actually majored in English in college and minored in broadcasting journalism.
Wow. Okay.
So continued writing throughout my whole life.
Wonderful. So when did you write your first novel that you tried to let the world know, your first publishing foray?
I was in my 20s when I got the nerve to send it out.
When
you're so young, you don't realize, you don't quite have the experience yet. So I got up the nerve to send out my first novel and expected a lot of interest, and I got a box full of rejections.
Wonderful. That's right. I've got a husband who wrote a novel recently, and he's in the box of rejection notice. So I'm in the wonderful husband. Oh, honey, it's wonderful. Someday it'll. Yes. Well, it does take a lot of guts, and you said the word rejection, and if you're not ready for rejection, don't date online and don't try to write a gay novel, right?
Absolutely. I would agree with you 100%.
Okay. So most of your novels have a mystery bend to them, the ones that I've read. I read through a few of them. Why the mystery? Why that genre?
I would say everything. I would say everything that I write has a mystery, suspense, sometimes thriller angle to it. And it's just a genre and a subgenre that I enjoy and always have since I was a child.
Right.
So I, regardless of what I write, whether it be a short story, whether it be a sonnet, a poem, whether you go into a novella or a full-fledged novel, I've always felt the need to include that. It's something that keeps me energized and keeps me focused and keeps me moving along. And I love laying out A, B, C, and to get to Z by the end, and the reader's with me. That's just something I've always enjoyed.
Great. And as I said, you're a major in a writing thing. You majored in English and broadcast journalism. It's still fun to read it. I'm a big reader. I've published one thing, and it was a long time ago, but I'm an avid reader, and it's always a kind of a thrill for me to pick up a new mystery. So I, as a reader, I'm telling you what I feel. I like to get into a mystery because it keeps me going rather than a historical novel or a psychological or self-help. I can't read those. Those drive me crazy. But, okay, so let's talk about Kendall Parker. Who's Kendall Parker? Tell me about him.
Oh, wow. Kendall Parker is a pretty amazing creature, actually. He is an Atlanta cop, a homicide detective at 10 years from when we're introduced to him. And all that time he's been in the closet. So in the first book, where he is assigned a very difficult case of investigating the murder of a young male nude dancer who is found in a local, very popular park in Piedmont Park, Atlanta.
I've been there.
Upon this assignment, it's a very nice place, but obviously a perfect place for a body. And so he happens to have a partner that he's had for 5 years on the force that is a bigot. And through this case, with it touching so close to home for Kendall Parker, things begin to break, and the bonds begin to break between the two partners, and things begin to unravel and reveal. And so he is forced out in front of his colleagues, in front of his comrades, and that's the basis for the subtopic of the first book. But it's all driven by his need to give closure to the family of this young man that was murdered, and to also ensure that this is not a murder that goes unnoticed and unsolved.
Okay. Very good. So,
he makes the decision within the book to come out, and especially to ensure that this young man is known to the community.
Okay. Yes. And how many books is Mr. Parker in? I don't have my I'm counting here, but you're faster.
Absolutely not a problem. There are two that are published. The first one is called Pretty Boy Dead. The second one was just published this past late December, and the title of it is The Deadwood Murders.
The Deadwood Murders. That's what I read. Yeah.
And the third one is already in the stages of writing that I'm currently working on, and the title is Murder on Peachtree.
Murder on Peachtree. So all of yours have you're the Atlanta mystery writer, right? Let me just tell you the readers a little, the listeners. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
I was going
to
say I'm the Atlanta mystery writer of gay novels. Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, I was going to throw that in. Everyone, it's a gay radio show, so everyone knows that part. I like things like that. There's the Patricia Cornwell stuff where she's in Virginia, and then the ones that are North Carolina, and then your novels, which are based in Atlanta. And for someone that's visited Atlanta like a couple of times, like I have, I've taken some classes there and done some touristy things there. So it's fun to read, to see Piedmont Park and the streets that I got lost on, because everyone else does too, and just the whole back street. But it also gives you it kind of lets people self-identify, either someplace they want to go or someplace they've been, or a relative used to live there. So they are kind of fun. I want to just tell you that I had a good time. It's been a few years, and now I think I want to go back to Atlanta for a visit. We don't know. So Mitch O'Reilly, how's he doing? Is he your other character?
Mitch O'Reilly, he's not one of my characters, but he is Brad Shreve.
Brad Shreve,
he's a friend of mine.
I've got him written down. So you've written about him. We're not going to talk about him right now. I do have a question about him later. Now you run a discussion group for LGBT novels and audiobooks called the Gay Mystery Murder Thriller. I'm going to call it the Gay Mystery Thriller Suspense Fiction discussion group. And you highlight other wonderful authors. And I was going to ask you how that got started, because you don't really see that. You really think people are going to be selfish and just promote themselves, and you're promoting four or five different authors on this this website, johnmichelson.net, johnmichelson.net. And I was just amazed about that. How did that get started?
Thank you for asking the question. You know, a lot of people have asked me over the years, why did I start to feature other writers that write in the same genre that I do?
Uh-huh.
And I just look dumbfounded to them and say, why not? We mm-hmm. all write the same thing. So, you know, there's
right.
not one reader for one genre. So I just feel that the more readers that we pull into the genre that we both write in, or in my case,
right.
more than just four or five that you indicate I've sponsored and supported over the years.
Right.
I feature every single week a
uh-huh.
exclusive excerpt from a writer within that genre of gay uh-huh. mystery, thriller, and suspense novels. And it's just something I've always enjoyed doing because, frankly, I'm a reader and I love reading
yeah.
them. So it gives me an opportunity to get to know all the writers and
right.
to help feature
yeah.
their work along with mine.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's why I got mixed up, because I'd written that name down, and then I put Tree's name next to it, and I went, oh, I didn't see that part. Okay. So we're going to get to
Oh, that's okay.
Another...
I'm flattered. Believe me.
Okay. All right.
I'm
well,
flattered. Not, you know, he's a wonderful writer.
I had fun reading through the excerpt. But then you have another romantic mystery, Prince of the Sea. Tell me about that one.
I do. The Prince of the Sea is actually going to be a trilogy.
And uh-huh.
the reason that I wrote this novel is because it's a novella, but it's going to end up being three novellas, which basically is going to be a full novel.
Uh-huh.
I love the coast, and I love the coast of Georgia. I've born and
right.
raised in Georgia all my life.
Uh-huh.
I've lived in Atlanta since I was 10 years old, so you might as well
uh-huh.
call me a native. But the coast is my heart, and Tybee Island is where it lies.
Okay.
So I decided to write a more or less a speculative fiction piece that also
uh-huh.
had a little bit of mystery and suspense to it. And a little bit of a romantic bent, but not too heavy.
Well, it's pretty romantic. It's okay. I thought it was romantic.
I think so. I think it's more from being subtle that
uh-huh.
can be more romantic than being straightforward.
Right. Oh, yeah. I agree. I mean, you're right. It's a fine line that you draw, that you travel when you try to be romantic, because you're wondering, oh, should I say this? Should I go a little further? But you're right. No, I felt it was romantic. You got my approval on that. We talked a little bit earlier off the air about this is my theory, and I've been doing this for about 20 years. I've been involved with gay literature. I was the CEO and executive director of America's largest circulating gay and lesbian library, the Stonewall Library and Archives, which is part of the Stonewall National Museum and Archives in Fort Lauderdale. That's
wow.
my plug. I'm giving you my plug.
Pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. It expanded while I was the CEO and executive director to a point where I was no longer I didn't have the skills, because now it does educational programs, curriculum, national touring programs. It's beyond any scope of my little library with 30,000 books. But I have a theory, and where you fit in and why you are so popular and why you are published is because our readers, our gay and lesbian readers, the people who are actually spending money to buy books and audiobooks and ebooks, are getting younger. They're not the 40, 50, 60, 70 plus year old men who were in the 70s and 80s and 90s the crux of gay books and literatures. We're talking about, you know, the Edmund Whites, the Andrew Hollerhans, the Felice Picanos. Those people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And those people were writing.
No, I was going to say absolutely. And they were.
We needed them.
They were all the writers that I read quite a bit. And Felice
sure.
Picano being one of my all-time favorites.
Sure. Okay. Well, And anyway, and I'm going to throw this in there. That is not the world that 20 and 30 and 18 and 19 year old gay people are living in for the most part anymore. 50%, 75% of you know, people who are self-identified gay are now living, you know, in pretty accepting and legal. Of course, now legally in 50 states, they can't even be fired. So they're looking for books that interest them, and it just so happens that a few of the characters are gay. It's not about drug use, AIDS, though that was an important part of our lives and a very important part of my life coming out and into the world. But you don't really see very many novels, books on that go through the AIDS crisis or the coming out crisis or the religious accepting crisis. So hats off to you that you have matured. You and I have both matured through that. I'm just going to give you a quick Amazon LGBT ranking of the best. the books that are selling are mystery novels like yours, romance novels like yours, and one thing you don't do yet are they're still buying vampire novels. And
never say never.
Never say never. We could have one next week. But I thought, you know, I found that very interesting because none of those have much to do with that angst of being rejected and thrown out and living on the streets and becoming a prostitute, and which are were fun to read, but are no longer the, and I think that's a great a point that we're beyond that. I think it's great anyway. So
I would agree with you, and I purposely wrote for that reason. I wanted to write just slightly beyond that. I'm writing in the current day, not historical fiction 20, 30 years ago.
Right. Okay, great. Good to hear. You told us how you got started. You told us about the rejection. And you're the writers that you highlight on your on johnmichaelson.net, I'll say that again. Do your writers ever contact you for advice?
You know, initially, no. I was always one contacting them constantly. Because I've just followed writers for so many years. And these days, it's so much easier for writers to make contact with their fans, unlike many years ago, where you had sit down at the typewriter and type out a letter and mail it off and hope somebody read it and got it over to the author. And ironically, I still have a few of those that I've kept, and I've gotten to know those people. And they're human, just like you and I. That's something I've enjoyed quite a bit. And believe it or not, some people do contact me and ask me because they seem to think that I have this really great way of marketing and reading the audience meeting the audience that I'm looking to capture. And I say to them, well, I don't know what I'm doing, but apparently what I'm writing is hitting the right note.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's, so how much of this do you think is word of mouth rather than the marketing or the style? I mean, don't you feel it's word of mouth too?
It has to be because frankly, my main marketing area is Facebook. And I know that there's so much more out there than Facebook. So I'm not a very technical person, so once I learned Facebook, that's pretty much all I know.
Okay.
And that's pretty much where I've stayed. I do interviews and I do post, I do provide exclusive excerpts when they're asked of me and things of that nature. So I would say some word of mouth as well.
Yeah, you're doing some marketing and you're getting out there. And it doesn't take much to start a word of mouth to go viral. I mean, it really doesn't because people ask you, what am I reading? What are you reading? I get that all the time. My friends get that all the time. You self-isolate in your, you know, my friends all read. So I probably don't have any friends that don't read.
Right. So, Absolutely. I would say the main thing that's gotten my name out there and gotten any attention at all is starting this group, the Game Mystery Thriller Suspense Group, 7 years ago. And the reason I started it was I looked out and I didn't see anybody else talking about these novels. And I knew there were so many more than just a few that you saw at the top seller list.
No, I agree. I agree. Exactly right. I mean, it's a nice, slick, I don't want to say slick, it's well-organized website. I do want to tell you that I'm on Twitter, and I put this blurb that everyone saw on Facebook and other places, and I've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people today like my tweet that I put out this afternoon with a link to this show. So I'm just telling you that maybe you should learn Twitter too.
I was going to say, I don't have a Twitter account, don't you?
I don't know. I didn't even look. You know that? I didn't even look if you had a Twitter account or not. Because my Twitter account is it's Stonewall Live, one word. But I didn't even look because I don't think I've seen you. But anyway, a few years ago, I had a young writer who was doing, by the way, a series of vampire novels. He told me to get a Twitter account. In fact, it was even more narrow than vampire novels. It was about a school for teenage vampires, a series of books that involved. I've got them right here. I'm not going to.
That's getting pretty low in the niche, isn't it? That's getting pretty detailed.
I know. He's doing pretty well. He has four. He had four books out, and then I think he's gone on to filmmaking now. I just spoke to him a few days ago. But anyway, yeah, I'm just telling you that I just wanted to see my notifications just from today. Twitter works completely differently, as you know. You have to have short 141 words, and you have to shorten
characters.
Length. Yeah, you have to shorten your links and, use
those
words.
And
how
hard that is for a novelist.
I know. You see, it's so hard for just someone like me. I had to learn how to shorten my URLs. There's a whole, you have to go to a different website and shorten your URL.
Well, I have to get my husband to help me because he is forever saying to me, 15 words or less, please. 15 words or less, please.
I know. You have to get, you put a picture up. You put a picture up and your 140 characters. So you're fine. And it does work. I mean, you have to like use a lot of, ats and we'll get on that. So a young person today comes up to John Michelson at the coffee shop or in line or at school or wherever and says, I want to be just like you. What's the first thing I should do?
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not. I want the answer. Because that can happen.
The first thing you should do is read everything you can get your hands on.
Good.
And then you get an idea of what people are writing, what people are really interested in, and it gives you a way to hone in on your area of interest and how you can focus on the areas that you want to write about. And I would say always read, never stop reading. We all can get better, and we all need to learn how to improve as we read, we do.
Good. That's great. You're exactly right. Do you journal?
Do I journal? Yes. I've been journaling since I was in my teenage years. And I've got boxes and files, and I can't even tell you how much I've got that's loaded up and packed away and kept away from water. The reason I say water is because our home flooded in 2016, so thank goodness all of my writing from all these years was saved.
Yes, people that live in the desert in Arizona and do not understand what you just said. I do. I live near the water. And you know, I have my journals. I have on a high shelf, and I had them stored in a storage locker, and then I got scared and brought them home, and that's my greatest fear, and I'm thinking of scanning all of them, which will take another year and a half of straight work, because I really don't want to lose them, but I really feel, for me, it's been a growth thing, and I think all writers, and maybe even, you know, all gay people. One of our projects that I did with the Stonewall Library is we went out and did video of people that elderly LGBT people, and put them in an archive, and they're amazing. They're absolutely just amazing to watch, and I think, you know, it's something that you want to leave behind, a journal to your family or friends or followers is a wonderful, wonderful way to do stuff. But you're right about the reading, and I feel that sometimes that's missing in our society. I mean, we seem to be illiterate, not illiterate. We can read, but we don't read. We YouTube. Let me give you an example. I have a son. I have a 43-year-old son. I was married to a woman for a while, and I will put something together from IKEA, and I will read the directions, and he goes to YouTube.
Yes.
So it's
I know where you're coming from.
Isn't that amazing? I can't do it from YouTube.
I know. That's pretty crazy.
I have to read it and dissect it and everything else. So promise that you'll come back on the show when you finish your trilogy.
Absolutely. This has been fun.
It's fun. We're almost done here. We just have a minute left on my clock. And I wanted to ask you one more question, a little personal stuff. You have been with this husband of 34 years. Tell me about him.
Wow. What do I say? I met him by accident, completely by accident, in a bar one night. You know, back when you met people in bars, in 86.
Wow.
And completely, totally by accident, introduced by a bartender friend, and that's history.
That's
the next
amazing.
Day, you know, he was a perfect gentleman, got my phone number, said, I'll call you. I didn't believe him. Next day, he called me, would you like to have dinner? Sure.
Okay.
You know, two or three days led to another two or three days. We've been together ever since.
No wonder you're a romance writer. You had a romantic background. Yeah. My husband and I met online 18 years ago. Go ahead. That's great stories. I mean,
I was going to say, partnered for 34 years, married for 5 when it became legal.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Same here. We've been together for 18, married for 6 or 7. We got married in California during that window break.
We especially wanted to wait until Georgia passed, you know, or Supreme Court, which they did.
Right. Well, that's great. We're gonna wrap it up in the next few seconds. This has been
awesome.
So much fun. I want you back we'll get in touch, because I'll keep track on johnmichaelson.net, johnmichaelson.net. You can probably find links to that on the Facebook page. And that's about all. Thank you so much for coming on the show, John, and good night.
Well, I can't thank you enough. Thank you.
You're a Southern gentleman. Good night from Fort Lauderdale. Good night, all.